Let's ride, let's ride, let's ride.
All right, we're on the Let's Ride podcast with Mikey Thompson. Mikey, very excited to have you on here. It's only the second time we've had a former Outlaws player who's now a coach on the pod. So very excited for that angle. We are going to be asking you if you're going to be playing on a 30-plus Vail team that's been getting a ton of love recently. So just to put you on the spot, July 1 through 3. Up in Vail, we need those legs out there. We need you playing. What do you say?
I will have to clear it with my wife, but I would love to. That sounds like a lot of fun.
All right, we gotta have the wives, the girlfriends, everyone out there. We understand that completely, especially to keep that tradition rolling. But what I'll do is I'm gonna get rolling here with a bio. Excited for this one, especially because I've got to know you from your college days when you were playing with my brother Chris at Virginia. So, Mikey, we'll say Coach Thompson, we have you graduating from the University of Virginia in 2010, where you played in, what, 3 Final Fours. You were a captain on that 2010 team. That was one of the most fun teams to watch that I ever got to see play. You especially on those wings, tough guy, defensive midfielder, running around, amazing on ground balls. I never saw anyone with a short stick that could pick up a ground ball, just absolutely running full speed with not having to slow down to pick that thing up. I thought that was like the most impressive thing about you when you were playing then, and obviously the leadership on a team like that. So after college, you stayed around, I guess, 5 years at Virginia. So you were a assistant coach in 2011. So you were part of that national championship team the year after you graduated from playing, which is incredible to be a part of that type of championship. And I have a feeling there's going to be some more in your future. So from there in 2011, you got picked up by the Denver Outlaws and played a couple season with the Outlaws, with me, with Chris. I think, Pete, you were there for one of those seasons as well. And in 2012, you joined the staff at Christopher Newport as an assistant coach, where you were there. And actually, in what, your first season as an assistant coach, you helped lead the team to their first ever NCAA tournament. And after a few seasons there, you were named the head coach in 2016. And as your first year as a head coach, was the first time ever that Christopher Newport was ranked in the coaches' poll. So you helped lead them to their first ever ranking, which is incredible as a first year head coach. And now you've been there 5 years and you've led them to last year, their first ever Final Four. So you made it to the Final Four last year with your program, which I read is actually the fastest for a program start in what, just 15 years of being a program. You made the Final Four, which is a record for any new program, which is pretty incredible. And right now you're in the midst of a phenomenal season. You're 14-0, coming off a massive 17-7 win over Salisbury, when at the time, I believe they were ranked first, you guys were ranked second. And you made quick work of them there. And just looking at your scores across the board, you have a 4-goal win, maybe 1 5-goal win, and then the rest have just been dominant victories. So you're certainly in a great spot right now as you come towards the end of the season. And then lastly, little fun fact, all right, Broncos country, very excited about Russell Wilson, the quarterback. I had heard that maybe you were actually his running back in high school. Is that true?
Yeah, that's right. He was 1 year behind me at Collegiate in Richmond, Virginia. And it made for some really, really fun high school football. We went 5 wide pretty much every time. And, you know, when he went out of the shotgun and they actually did hand me the ball, it was kind of a surprise because we threw the ball so much. So yeah, we had a lot of fun playing high school football.
That's awesome, man. You still stay in touch with him to this day? You guys friends?
We do. He actually sent our little group text a voice message last weekend that I was able to share with the guys. So you heard it here first. Russell Wilson is at least partly a Division III lacrosse fan.
There you go. So I got a quick question for you regarding not so much lacrosse, but you're there in Virginia Beach, right? That's where Christopher Newport is. Correct.
Yeah. It's in Newport News, Virginia. And I've lived in Virginia Beach since I started working at CNU. It's about 40 minutes away.
So you see the surfboard in the background. I know you like to get out on the beach with your wife, and you got a young son. So how big of a part of your life is the surfing and going to the beach, and what does that mean to you? Because it looks awesome. I'm super jealous every time I see you posting stuff and getting out there.
Yeah, well, I think it had a lot to do with what initially drew me to seeing you. I grew up in Richmond and went to school in Charlottesville, and I've always loved the beach. And so when I was kind of looking for what I wanted to do after college, there was an opening at CNU, and my younger brother had just committed to play lacrosse at CNU. And so I also had an older sister who went here, and I knew a little bit about the school. And to be completely honest, I was like, you know, what's the worst that can happen? I'm going to go live at the beach and I'm going to coach at CNU. And if I don't like it, then I'll do something else. And, you know, fast forward 10 years later and I'm still here. So I really love the area. And I love the school as well. Obviously I've been there for a long time.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's an incredible lifestyle that you have going there. I know at one point you tried to convince my brother Chris to join you, and it didn't quite happen, but I think things are working out for both of you guys. Talk a little bit about your time at Virginia, right? You got to play for the great Dom Starja. You were a part of many teams that were always ranked top three, you know, Final Four type teams. And playing for that type of coach, how is that, not just playing for Coach Starja, but being at Virginia, molded you and kind of shaped you as the coach you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, growing up in Richmond, like playing lacrosse at UVA was always my ultimate goal. I remember, you know, sitting on the hill as a little kid and going up to watch all those games. And like, for me, that was kind of the ultimate goal, was to be able to play there. And, you know, just my time there, we had some really, really good teams, and, you know, met my best friends there. And, you know, lacrosse is a big deal. Guys really, really are committed to being the best. You know, I remember Coach Starza saying at the beginning of the year, you know, all we want is a chance. You know, we want to be able to have enough guys on that team that we have a real chance to win a national championship. And, that was always the ultimate goal. And, you know, those guys, the ultimate mentors, Coach Van Arsdale, Coach Starza, John Walker, who I actually was able to see this past weekend when we went back for that 2011 reunion. Just such a great group of coaches, and they really led us through some amazing years and some really hard things as well. And I think that's ultimately, I always say this, but those guys are ultimately what led me to become a college coach, just because of the impact they had on me and my friends.
For sure. And you mentioned the hard times. I know you were a senior with George Hughley in your class, and Yardley Love, and what happened there, as everyone in lacrosse knows that story. Maybe people don't know how close you were with Yardley, and just being a part of that as a player and an undergrad, and not quite maybe totally understanding the magnitude of a situation like that. But now, almost what, even over a decade later, I would imagine that's changed you as a coach, maybe the way you approach your players, and just informing them and making sure that you're proactive in scenarios like this, if that's something that you're doing with your program.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, just having that experience, and then also, you know, having the passing of our good friend Will Barrow just a couple years before that, like our group went through some pretty heavy stuff. And, you know, getting into college coaching, I knew that college kids go through some pretty hard things. And so I went into my first year at CNU as an assistant, you know, of course, having a younger brother that was going into that situation as well. I think I approached it from the standpoint of, let's just create a really good culture, a supportive culture where guys care about each other and guys care about, you know, the game. And, you know, from there, you know, it's going to take some time, but I think that was my starting point. We might not have been in the top 100 back then in 2012. And so just starting from that point of not necessarily wanting to win a whole lot of games, that's going to come. But let's just create a great culture where guys really care about each other. They're willing to do what's right. And I think that's the main thing that I really pulled from those tough experiences and getting into a profession that I knew was gonna be hard. I can't imagine how hard that was for our coaches to navigate that situation. And so I knew it was going to be hard, but I knew that ultimately it was going to be worth it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you talk about the way that a coach's career goes typically, and it's not always, you know, be at one place for 10 years, guys jump around, guys make moves. You've shown a ton of loyalty to that place and a consistent upward trajectory. What tell us about like how that has evolved culturally, how everything you've done there as a leader of that program has led you to what's happening right now and last year to put you in a place to compete for a national championship.
Yeah, I mean, I think the starting point is that I just have a lot of confidence in the school, you know, the university. It's a great school. It's a beautiful campus. It's in a really, really great area of Virginia. And so from a recruiting standpoint, I always felt like if we could just keep getting better and better recruits every year, things were going to start to gather some momentum. And so I think really what you're seeing now is just kind of a culmination of a lot of hard work, you know, with our staff and the recruiting and the hard work that the guys put on and off the field to just keep getting better every year. And, you know, when you feel like you have the support of the university and, you know, everything that you really need to be successful, you just have to be really patient and, you have to be consistent. And, I feel like we're getting to a pretty good place right now. And, it's been a fun journey for sure. And none of it's happened overnight.
So to dig into that a little bit deeper, you mentioned like, you know, the recruiting piece. Obviously you've done a phenomenal job recruiting. I think we're going to ask a little bit more in detail about what that looks like, but talk us through like what you do for your team from a mindset standpoint. We've been made aware that like, that's a huge thing that you like to focus on and building out the mentality of your guys. And is that visualization? Is that goal setting? Is that, you know, just the development of your players is clearly going in the right direction. What encompasses that whole process?
Yeah. You know, when we went through COVID, one of the things that we were able to do in the fall was, you know, I kind of put together a curriculum of some of the most important mindset skills. And, you know, we'd hop on Zoom calls and it was about 10 total lessons. And, you know, it ranged from stuff like confidence, optimism, focus, how to calm yourself down if you're too ramped up before a game, you know, controlling what you can control and kind of ignoring the noise, you know, how to deal with doubt, all that kind of stuff. So we really dove deep into some of those foundational mindset skills. And on top of that, it's just part of our language. You know, we have a halftime at every practice where the coaches are going to emphasize something that's really important, either on or off the field. And all these things have really become part of our language. You know, last year our saying was doesn't matter, get better. This year it's, you know, the following year it was what's next, you know, always focusing on just the next play. And then this year it's win, which stands for what's important now. And so I think probably staying present, mindfulness is the thread that goes between all of these things, just not getting too far ahead of yourself and really just locking into the present moment. But, you know, there's people out there that'll tell you that this game is really mental. You know, you can put in the work on the field to make sure that your skills are sharp, but on game day, you want to feel really, really confident and you want to be able to be resilient when things don't go your way as well.
How have you done that as a coach? Like, you know, you not fast forwarding from year one to now in your mind, how have you stayed present throughout your time there? Does the beach and the surfing, does that help you stay mindful? Talk to us about what you do to keep yourself in that present moment.
Yeah. You know, I do have a bit of a commute to and from work every day. And so like I decided really early on in my career that I was going to use that time to listen to audiobooks and podcasts and, you know, you flash forward 10 years and that's about almost 2 hours a day of just cranking through books. You know, I've gotten through about 100 and one of the common themes is, you know, that you just have to be consistent and you have to figure out what's really important to you. And when you have something that's really important to you, you realize that other things aren't as important. And I think that that's really been a big thing for me. And over the COVID period, I actually got trained and got a certification to teach mindfulness. And so I do have a little bit more of a background in what that means. And, it's pretty simple. You hear the word meditation and your mind kind of races off to some guy sitting on a mountaintop, and it's really not about that. You know, I think athletes are starting to realize that to reach peak performance, you've got to be in the moment. And, it's really just about being able to refocus on where you are right now. That's all there is to it.
Talk a little bit about your coaching staff. So we know that whether it's Division One, Division Three, coaches are always, you know, moving around, changing schools. You have Coach Zach Thomas, one epic name as a Miami Dolphins fan, incredible. But you've kept him on staff now. He's what, over 9 seasons he's been with you. So clearly the two of you must have a close relationship, and you're on the same page when it comes from what you're trying to do, X's and O's, what you're trying to do off the field, in the locker room. And then you bring on another coach, a newer coach, Coach Myers. So clearly you're happy with where your staff's at, keeping a guy on board that long, showing crazy loyalty, and in a world where, you know, when you show success, assistant coaches get opportunities to leave. I'm sure you've even had some of those opportunities to leave. So kind of talk about how you've kept Coach Thomas with you, brought on Myers, and how the staff works together in your roles.
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate you asking about those guys, because they're really, they're really the key to this whole operation, as you know. I mean, the fact that Zach and I have been together for 8 or 9 years is just, it's kind of unprecedented, honestly. I mean, he's been able to run our offense, and we're just on the same page and can finish each other's sentences. And we're very different in many ways too, which is awesome. Wanted to give him a quick shout out. He's actually on his way to Roanoke College right now to be inducted into their Hall of Fame. And so congratulations to him. This was one practice I can remember in 8 or 9 years where we didn't have him out there. And I started asking some of our seniors to like take his place and say some of the things that he might say at practice. So we're very different. And I think that that's what you need. He kind of gets me ramped up every now and then. And I think if it wasn't for Zach, I probably wouldn't ever say anything to the refs the entire game. But he'll get in my ear. He's like, you got to tell him about that, you know, like, so that's been a great relationship. And then, you know, Coach Myers, he's in his first year with us this year. And within like the first month of him being on our staff, I just completely turned over the defense to him. He is a real worker, and he is great with our guys. He has a great understanding of the game. So for me to be able to just step aside and let him run the defense has been a really big piece of our success this year as well. And now I get to just kind of bounce around and do a little bit of work with the offense here and there, and just kind of keep the culture intact. So those guys are really incredible.
I know exactly what you're saying. I'm just a high school head coach, but I don't do anything during games. My joke is that I call timeouts. Maybe I have a conversation with the ref here and there, but before the game, when they're all doing their warmups and everything, I'm picking up balls, putting them on the end line, shagging balls. I mean, I just walk around with nothing to do. My assistants are the ones getting all the conduct penalties. You know, Coach Clausen can get pretty intense at times, so I'll let him get the conducts, yell at the refs, all that good stuff. So it's great to have a staff when you're just in line, and as a head coach, you can focus on so many more things outside of the X's and the O's, because at the end of the day, you know, are those really making and breaking your team? I think you understand the mindset side of things, the full year, the culture, and it's clearly working for you. That, you know, it's the X's and O's is probably the last thing at the end of the day that equals success for a squad. With you, I know that you're big into some box lacrosse. I think I saw that you guys have an outdoor box facility on campus. Kind of talk about that a little bit. And when we're talking about player development and what you're doing over the course of the year, what kind of a player's commitment might look like for those that, you know, those high school kids that are out there that maybe don't understand what it is that they're committing to, how you use the box game. I know you talk frequently with Jamie Monroe, who's, you know, one of those guys, a guy that is always thinking outside the box, no pun intended there, but likes that box game. So how do you immerse that into what you're doing with your players?
Yeah, you know, about probably 6 years ago, we started doing this beach lacrosse tournament where we played three by on the beach. We broke the team up into a few different teams and took them all down to Virginia Beach, got the small box cages. And we really just started this culture where guys played as much three by, you know, or four on four, whatever the game was, with the tennis balls and the small net as possible. And we really started to see that there's probably nothing you can do that's better for you to develop than playing that style of lacrosse. It's fun. It's a great way to get a workout. You're forced to make tons of decisions. You get to finish in tight spaces. It's essentially box without the boards and without the equipment. And so, you know, even we went as far as our seniors even coming up with a leaderboard where you got, you know, you would get a point for every game that you played a seven, and you would get a point for every game that you win. So after a couple of years of that, I had seen one of these outdoor box facilities, and we spent a couple of years doing some fundraising for it. And now it's just kind of added another element to our player development. And honestly, it's the way we're playing offense now. Everything that we're doing on offense is bringing the ball as much as possible, and we're setting seals and picks off the ball. And it has a lot to do with the way that we're playing now, even though we don't necessarily have guys that have a box background. That's something that we're really trying to change. We're trying to bring in kids that we see with that skill set, and then really continue to develop that throughout their 4 years with us.
And to dive into even just more of like the year in the life of a CNU lacrosse player, like what does fall ball look like outside of, you know, obviously going to Virginia Beach and playing some three by? I mean, that sounds great. And I think you've made it out to the courts in Denver on a Thursday night, where we have had a tradition of like 15 years of 40 to 60, you know, guys and girls getting together to play three by out on those courts. So I understand how much fun it is, and truly believe in on Thursday nights before a Saturday game, getting out there and getting my hand eye going and just breaking a sweat and just having a ton of fun. What does your fall ball look like, when you're, you know, with your guys, with lifting, practice, if, you know, team exercises, what, you know, what kind of commitment are you guys looking at?
Yeah. I mean, I always tell recruits that it's going to be pretty similar to what kids are doing at a Division I level. The difference is that the coaches aren't as involved. So, you know, we have our normal non-traditional season in the fall, where we go, you know, about 4 days a week for about a month. And that's from late September to late October. And outside of that, you know, our guys will get out there, our guys will do some captain's practices and stuff like that. They'll be in the weight room 3 days a week. You know, that was a big emphasis for us. After last season, we really felt like that was an area where we could improve. And guys really took that to heart and worked incredibly hard in the weight room to get bigger, faster, and stronger. And we also added some speed development stuff that we did this fall, where we got a timing system, and we did timed 40s and timed 10-yard flies at least once a week. And we tracked that throughout the course of the fall. And so we're definitely doing a lot with our guys. And we tell them in the recruiting process that, you know, you really have to love it. You know, you have to love the game, and you have to love to get better, because we're not the type of coaching staff that likes to yell and scream at kids to get them to do stuff. We want the types of kids that really just love to do it inherently and are willing to push to get better every day.
Yeah, that's awesome. So Talk about the recruiting. I mean, you've had a ton of success recruiting. It'd be hard not to label you as, you know, one of the top, if not the top recruiter in the Division III landscape. What are you looking for on the field in that process? And then kind of when you bring them on campus, what's your approach to that? Some of the things that maybe some of these kids do that you say, yeah, this is a guy we really like, and or something that maybe could be a turnoff in terms of a fit for your program and things that you're looking for.
Yeah, I think the number one thing is just competitors. I think when I go out and watch kids, obviously you have to have a certain level of skill and athleticism and toughness. But the kids that do the best in our program are the ones that just love to compete. And you know, our practices are pretty intense when they can be. You know, we love to put a scoring system on things as simple as a 5-on-4 drill. You know, we always have some sort of a scoring system in place so that there is a little bit of, you know, there is that competitive, those competitive juices flowing. And that's really the first thing that I look for on the field is guys that are just willing to do whatever it takes to win. And when I talk to club and high school coaches, that's something I'll ask them as well is, you know, what type of teammate are they? You know, how hard of a worker are they? And are they a competitor? And a really good sign of that is if they play multiple sports. I mean, that's definitely something that we look for is guys that, you know, play on their high school basketball team or play football or hockey or soccer or whatever it is. I think that those guys are generally the real competitors.
And so when these kids come on your campus and you're evaluating them a little bit further in terms of character and personality fit for your program, you know that they're a competitor, they check the academic box. Like what are some things that kind of are either red flags, or give one of each if you would, like a red flag and or something that, hey, this is a kid from a character standpoint that's going to fit in real nicely with us.
Yeah. Well, you know, we really utilize prospect days, and obviously a lot of schools do. And I think sometimes prospect days get a bad rap, but they are really valuable. I mean, we get all the kids in a room and we get to lay out everything that's most important to us in our program. They get to do a campus tour, and we get that time on the field with them where we get to put them in some of our drills. And we have a lot of our seniors out there helping out, and they get to see kind of how we play and how we coach. And, you know, we might really like the way a kid plays within his club team and what we saw from him on the recruiting trail. But then when we see him in our drills tend to bring out the competition in everybody. And so sometimes our red flag might be, you know, you drop a pass or you miss a shot and we don't love your body language, or we don't love the fact that you immediately turn around and start riding, or you're not mixing it up on ground balls, or you're not the type of kid to go celebrate, you know, with a bunch of kids that you just met for one day. Like those are kind of the intangibles that we look for. And those shine through pretty quickly. It's shocking how quickly you can tell if a kid is your type of kid. And I kind of mentioned it, like we really look for the grinders out there. So if you look at our starting attack, they're all great riders. They're really skilled and they're smart players, but we always have some guys that love to ride, and we love offensive midfielders that are willing to get back and play some tough defense and put them on the wings and all that stuff as well. So I think that's had a big part of our recruiting process.
And when you, this is going to be a two-piece question for more on the recruiting side of things. One, when you show up to a tournament or an event, are you leaving anyone off the table? If there's a kid out there that's like, you know, you see all these, maybe these top D1 schools are like, wow, we really like this guy. Does that phase you at all? Are you going to go after that kid right there? And then the other question would be in terms of like timing, right? Are you going into this summer recruiting just completely wide open? Are 23s or current juniors already committed to CNU, or do you wait and then approach those guys going into their senior year?
Yeah, I always tell people we usually have about 25% of our recruiting class filled before the summer going into senior year. About 75% of the class will have committed. you know, in the summer going into senior year. And then we'll usually leave a few spots open for some of those, you know, guys that still wanted to go Division One or guys that we've really liked throughout the process that just needed a little bit more time in the fall of their senior year. So we're currently at about five with a goalie, a faceoff guy, and three lefties. And that's, you know, kind of right where we want to be. And, you know, in terms of your first question, I mean, we really, there's going to be some of those guys out there that are just clearly going to go play in the ACC or, you know, the Big Ten. And, they're probably pretty far along with some of those schools, but, you know, there's never any harm reaching out to them and just kind of seeing where they're at and jumping on a phone call with them. And those are sometimes the kids that will remember that conversation or they'll remember that campus visit, you know, 4 months down the road. And when they're weighing their options, they're like, maybe this might be a great fit for me. And so I always feel like if nothing else, it's good to reach out to kids and let them know, hey, I think you're a great player and you might be a good fit with us. And if you miss, you miss.
And for this next question, I don't want you to be humble. I want you to really try to answer this. If CNU right now was a Division I program, where do you think you'd be ranked in the country?
Man, you need to let me know before the podcast that you're going to throw this type of stuff at me. Oh gosh. You're putting me in a lose-lose situation here. I'm just going to say that if Pete Poulion and Matt Bocklet played for CNU, they would probably be the best players on our team.
I don't agree. I'm putting you in the top 25. You like that? Well, you think that's, you okay with that?
Since this is only audio and not video, I'll just look at you and then let the audience.
That was a brilliant answer. Deflect by complimenting the interviewers. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
I mean, we've seen it, right? Like Tufts played Dartmouth last year. Tufts being one of the top teams out there in Division III, and Dartmouth at the time was on the lower end of Division I. And I mean, it wasn't a good game, right? Like Tufts took it to them. Like it's, I think a lot of kids, I think it's really important for high school kids to understand that some have that Division I or bust mentality when a lot of the time they could actually go play for a D2 or D3 school that's going to have a more talented team and a better education a lot of the times too. So, I mean, I think that's something that that a lot of people need to understand. I know being out here in Colorado, like there's a lot of high school players that don't know how many good schools there are on the East Coast and how much talent there is out there and the academics and that type of stuff. They just see the teams that are always on TV. But it's real, right? If you're one of the top teams and you guys are in Division III, I think you could play a Division I schedule, and I think everyone would be surprised by the results. Maybe not people that really watch the game and get to watch a lot of lacrosse, but I truly believe, you know, nobody beats Salisbury 17-7, right? That doesn't happen. Salisbury is a team that everyone always talks about in years past that, you know, maybe is a top 10 D1 program with some of the teams that they've had. Like you guys are riding high right now, 14 straight wins, a great start to the season. You're a coach that's played at the highest level of college lacrosse. Like you know the game, you have a great staff that you put together, you're crushing recruiting. Like I have no issue saying that. Like I think you guys would be one of the top teams in all of college lacrosse. Well, so I think people understand that.
I appreciate that. And I definitely will take the opportunity to just say that, you know, at the top level of Division III, it is as fun as it gets. I mean, there are some amazing coaches. There are some amazing players. The kids are really committed. And it's just the best. I've had so much fun just kind of being in this journey in Division III. And there are some really, really good players and really, really good coaches. And I think on any given day, yeah, some of the best teams in Division III could definitely compete with, you know, that 20, maybe like top 20 to 30 would be my best guess. I mean, there's not too much to compare it to. But I'll tell you right now, we have this kid, Max Wayne, who does not get enough credit, defender and Matt, I know that you coach in the PLL. Like, this is a kid that can absolutely play at the very highest level. And maybe that's an offline conversation, but this kid is the real deal.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. It's kind of the man in the arena, right? Like, I remember being at Howard Community College, and I was thinking before I got there, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get out of there as soon as I could, you know, and go play Division I somewhere. And I loved it. And I think to your point in being present and being mindful and enjoying where you are and being where your feet are, you know, like when you're at a place like that and you're having a good experience, it's such a cool thing. And so I would imagine that if you asked your guys that, they'd probably be like, we'll play anybody. And yeah, we'll probably have a tough battle, but I think we can play lacrosse and compete with anybody in the country. And that's a really cool thing that you've built that, you know, from the ground up. You know, you look at, you're still an extremely young head coach, and you've been a head coach for some time now. So you look at all the lessons you've learned and the success that you've had, and a little bit of a two-part question. How do you figure out how to keep your team grounded? You're never as good as you think you are. You're never as bad as you think you are. And you've been on kind of both sides of that now. How do you keep your team from getting complacent after beating a Salisbury by 10 goals as the number one team in the country? And dethroning them. And then the second part, and a little bit of a different topic, is, and we ask a lot of coaches that come on this podcast this, like, when you look at the rest of your career, and this is a tough question as a head coach, but do you have any aspirations to coach the Division I level and be a head coach at like an ACC school, like a Virginia, maybe your alma mater, like way down the road?
Yeah, well, to the first question, you know, something that we do talk a lot about is neutral thinking. And, you know, Matt, for all the Russell Wilson fans out there, like this is a big thing with him. And neutral thinking is basically like you have to accept that the past is the past. Like, it's real, whether you liked it or not. It did happen, but it has nothing to do with what you'll do next. And so, you know, on every Monday when we come together and we watch the film, we talk about the positives and we talk about the needs improvement. We call it Truth Day. And so we're done with that game as quickly as possible. And so just because we had a great game versus Salisbury last weekend and we did a lot of things well, that has nothing to do with what we're going to do tomorrow versus Mary Washington and Sunday versus Colorado College. So every week poses a new challenge. And this challenge is we got to play back-to-back games. And, you know, we've got senior day, we've got some distractions and stuff like that. We have, you know, we're number one, and, you know, we had that great game a week ago. So that's a challenge. So it's really all about looking towards what's next and realizing that, you know, the past is the past. And, that's the best way to stay humble, really. The other thing we talk a lot about is just taking the next right step. And sometimes, you know, you're thinking too far ahead. You know, we're thinking ahead to the national championship and then you waste a day. And it can be overwhelming sometimes when you start looking too far ahead. So I always tell our guys, just what's the next thing that you need to do right now? And if you break it into smaller chunks, especially for college kids who have a lot on their plates, it makes it a little bit more manageable, and it allows you to stay present a little bit more. And, you know, I'd probably answer that second part of that question in a similar light. And that's just, you know, I'm really happy with where I'm at right now. I mean, I love this school, and I love our guys, and I feel like we can continue to build and string together some amazing years and some amazing experiences. And, you know, I just want to kind of see where that takes me. I really haven't gotten too far ahead of myself in that regard. And I honestly mean that, you know, if an opportunity presents itself way down the line, then I would be foolish not to at least entertain it, but that's just not really on my radar right now.
Yeah. There's not a whole lot of Division I schools with that proximity to the beach to make sure you can get your surfing in and your beach fun beforehand. But very excited to watch and follow CNU for the rest of this season and certainly seasons to come. You know, it sounds like mentally, you know, you're in a great place and you have your players in a great spot right now. So that approach and everything, very exciting. Pete and I will expect an answer about Vail by the end of the week.
We got the answer.
he's got to ask first.
Well, hold on. I'm going to give you the sales pitch. The sales pitch here, Mikey, is you're going to come this year and bring your family if you're ready to do that. My son is like 2.5 and my daughter's 8 months. So I'm like, this year I'm going to go out solo. I'm going to see the boys play. Next year, the kids are a little bit older. We're going to make it like a yearly thing where we bring them out. And it turns into one big Outlaws family reunion. And so take whatever you want from that. But he already said that he's got to ask. I think his wife's going to give him the green light, provided that she knows he's coming out and hanging out with a bunch of good guys.
Yeah.
It sounds like a great time. The last time I was out in Vail was my summer after my last year in college. And it's amazing. I remember those ice baths in the river after the game. Sometimes after the night before as well.
What team did you play for?
I played for the Merrill Lynch team. And we had Greg Gerimlian as our face-off guy, and he didn't lose a face-off the entire tournament. Oh, man. I'm not lying. It was awesome. So we ended up winning.
Well, if we can get Adam Gittleman to ever stop playing lacrosse, we can get him in goal for the Vail tournament as well. If we can get Coach Clausen maybe to put that knee brace back on and get back out there, it'd be a great way to get all you guys back out there. So really looking forward to following along. And, you know, if CNU wins that championship, which I know you don't want to hear that and you don't want to you don't want to think about that just yet, but I might just buy your flight to make sure that you're out there in Vail.
That sounds good. Well, thanks so much for having me on. Good catching up. Love your family, Bach. And Pete, I remember in my earliest days at CNU, I was sending a lot of Pete Pouliot highlight tapes to our guys, just telling them to watch. So always love watching you play as well.
Surprised that worked out. Not a very fundamental program you're building, huh? Just a lot of underhand.
No, not at all.
Good stuff. But thanks for joining us, man. And good luck this weekend and the rest of the way.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a good one. Let's ride, let's ride, let's ride, let's ride.